I'm Brian Ellison, in for Steve Kraske, and this is Up to Date. We all know the sorts of things that supposedly matter when it comes to manners and etiquette, where the salad fork goes and so on, and we probably all have our own pet peeves of politeness, too, the things that we know a civilized person shouldn't do. But what really are manners about? Why do they matter? Because they certainly seem to in every time and culture. And are there universal principles that should guide us when we eat or talk or email? Today, an author of A New Guide to Manners examines our own daily attempts at common courtesy. We'll see how 21st century realities are changing what makes for grace or gaucheness. So stay with us, please, if you don't mind, sir or madam, for Up to Date after this hour's news. Good morning, and welcome to Up to Date. Steve Kraske is away. I'm Brian Ellison. Start a conversation about good manners, and you're likely to get a few different reactions. Some would bristle at a topic that seems to them elitist and exclusionary. Manners, to some, are a way of separating the refined from the common, and that has no place in our modern world. Others, though, are eager to broach the subject, unleashing a litany of etiquette woes that they see in modern culture, from boardrooms to fine restaurants to Facebook. But our guest today on Up to Date takes it as a chance for philosophical reflection. Though we may know bad manners when we see them, what exactly are good manners? And why does everyone think they have them? In a world of vastly diverse cultures and situations, are there certain universal principles that underlie our etiquette expectations? And how is the 21st century changing the world of manners? Henry Alford is the author of Would It Kill You to Stop Doing That? He's been called an investigative humorist, which sounds like a great job to me. He's joining us from the NPR studios in New York City. Henry Alford, welcome to Up to Date.
Hello, hello.
So not to be rude, but was the world really crying out for another book about manners?
You may well ask. Indeed. Yes, I think it does need one. And part of it is buried. Part of the answer there is buried in your introduction, which is that so many of us think that bad manners are something that other people have. We always have rationalizations and excuses for ourselves. But in fact, the gist of the book or part of it is that I myself cop to some bad manners, and what I'm saying is I have bad manners, and you yourself, Brian, may have some bad manners, because I think there are a lot of things that we do unintentionally that are bad manners.
All right. Well, I'll try not to take offense at that. We'll explore that through the show. So you did a lot of research to figure this out. You start the book, in fact, with sort of a tour of Japan. Why Japan?
Well, I've always thought of Japan as sort of the Fort Knox of the World Manners Reserve. That's a place that puts such a high premium on decorum. So I knew that if I went there and immersed myself in it, that when I returned to the United States, I'd have a much better perspective on what our manners are all about.
Yeah, and what did you find?
Well, I found lots of things, small things like, you know, in Japan, people who are riding an escalator will all stand flush right if they're not moving or walking up the escalator. So that leaves a lane open for through-going traffic.
Which is theoretically the way it's supposed to be done here, but it doesn't always do it.
I ain't seeing it so often. So I found lots of small things like that were wonderful. But the larger and the more important one was this idea of community. As one Japanese person explained it to me, he said, you know, I would never eat or speak on the phone while I'm on the subway, because that would say something bad about Japanese people. So that he sees his behavior not just as a reflection of himself, but of his larger group.
And when you get to sort of defining what makes for good manners, you say that it does have to do with sort of seeing yourself from the perspective of others.
I think so. Yeah, ultimately, I think that manners are about imagination. Yeah, that it's your ability to be so empathic that you are putting yourself in the other person's shoes regardless of your own perspective, which is a very different point of view from where I start out in the book. I start out with this idea that we are all inheriting the toilet seat, meaning that every time you emerge from a single commode public facility, that everyone's going to assume that the state of the toilet seat is your doing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I've always operated through life. It's basically the fear of humiliation has propelled me to do good acts, to that I never wanted to be caught doing something bad. But you know, that's really operating at just the basest possible
right.
level of good manners.
And in all of this research, I mean, how much variation is there about what people expect to be good manners from culture to culture or from social stratum to another? How much difference is there?
Oh, it's huge. And I think that's the story of modern manners is, you know, everyone always wants to say, well, have manners really gotten worse today? Or are they worse than they used to be? And I find that question almost unanswerable. But I think what we can say is that manners are increasingly relative. I think that every day we walk through what are almost a series of microclimates. Think about something like talking on the cell phone in front of other people. I find that really rude. If I'm hanging out with a friend and he or she answers his cell phone. However, if I'm with someone who's a working mommy or a group of working mothers, then suddenly I don't feel that that's bad manners because those ladies have so much on their plates mm-hmm. and they're constantly putting out fires. Or take it to a third situation. What if you're with a single friend at a bar and she sees that guy she's gone on two dates with? Suddenly it might be very nice for me to pretend that my cell phone has rung and to then answer it to give the lovebirds some space.
So if all of these sort of manners ideas can't be contained in rules, since it's all situational, I mean, what is there to say about them? Why are they so important?
Well, I think that there are lots of specific things that you can say and that do matter from group to group. But I think the bigger message is that manners today is not about good manners is not about memorizing a list of do's and don'ts. It's much more about being able to enter a new milieu or situation and being able to look for clues. So that if you have a new job, you know, you're going to work at this new corporation or you're going to another country or you're going into some social situation where there's some random factors, I think it's wonderful if you can do a little research beforehand. I travel a lot. I'm someone who's always saying, oh, well, you really need to know how to say thank you and excuse me in the language of the country you're going to. And I don't mean to just give that lip service. I really mean look in your guidebook. Those two phrases are in the back. Know them before you get on the plane. Because mm-hmm. we all think, oh, I'm just going to play it moment by moment. And if I get in an uncomfortable situation, I'll just say, I don't speak English. But if you have that in your arsenal, if you know how to say excuse me, you're much more likely to utter those words once you arrive abroad.
We're talking with Henry Alford. He's a writer and author of the new book, Would It Kill You to Stop Doing That?, about manners in the modern world. Henry, you compare in your book our societal decision to observe good manners to being sort of like a bunch of porcupines. Talk about that image for us.
Oh, well, there's an old German bit of folklore about porcupines in winter cohabitating, and that if they huddle too closely together for warmth, that they jab each other and cause each other to bleed. But if they are too far apart, then obviously they don't get the body heat. So good manners, according to this piece of folklore, is the ability to stand just close enough that you get the body heat, but not the puncture wounds.
Mm-hmm. Which makes a lot of sense. You in fact, wrote, I appreciated when you wrote at one place, manners don't need to take the form of asparagus forks and my good sir. The manners I'm talking about are available to all, regardless of station in life. That you seem to be looking for universal principles. What are some of the universal principles you unearthed?
Well, I mean, most of them are fairly obvious. It's things like, you know, do unto others as you would have them do unto you, or modesty, you know, not flouting your accomplishments. Things like that are pretty universal. You're not going to, you know, unless you're getting into, you know, some sort of criminal milieu, that usually you're going to find those things stand up.
Mm-hmm. You, in your research, we already mentioned that you took a trip to Japan. You also interviewed, of all people, Miss Manners, Judith Martin. I'm curious what she's like.
Oh, she's terrific. She's got a big upswoop of gray hair. She's got kind of googly, twinkle-filled eyes. For me, the vibe was very much, she reminded me of my favorite art history teacher. Hmm. And she, you know, I got in touch with her publicist, said, where do you want to meet? And she doesn't do interviews in her house. And I asked why, and I was told, because she lives there.
Right. Sure. Fair enough.
So she wanted to come to my hotel lobby. The most interesting thing that we talked about, I thought, was this pretty surprising provenance of parts of Southern manners, which is to say things like calling people who aren't related to you uncle or aunt, or the expression, hey, y'all, that a lot of those things that we think of as being distinctly Southern were traits that were passed on to people through slaves. The idea being that plantation owners very often left the care of their children to the household slaves. And it was those slaves who imparted a lot of these wonderful customs that we now think of as being quintessentially Southern or maybe quintessentially American.
Hmm. That's one of those, in the case of a Southern, sort of Southern hospitality or Southern manners, we sometimes have an expression around here, Midwestern nice, which is sort of a double-edged sort of comment to say that someone is being Midwestern nice. Do you find that sort of the regional expressions of manners come with sort of a dark side as well?
Oh, wow, what a great question. I think probably in any region of the United States, you're going to find that kind of plasticky, forced graciousness. The phrase that I love comes from the English writer Samuel Johnson, and he referred to good manners as being fictitious benevolence. Mm. And I think that there's a way to be fictitiously benevolent that is not forced, because by Midwestern nice, what I'm hearing is that it's coming out slightly in a strangled manner.
Right, or that
manner.
It's inauthentic. You know, that it's telling people what's the right thing to be saying to them, whether it's what you mean or not. Right.
Yeah. Well, I think those folks, if it's coming across as fake, they just gotta sharpen their fictitious benevolence.
All right. Well, let's invite our listeners to call in with their Midwestern niceness or not. Do you think manners matter? Have someone's good manners or bad manners ever made an impact on you or your life? And how about your own manners? Are you willing to subject those to public scrutiny? Call us now with your questions or comments for Henry Alford. Our number is 816-235-2888. That's 235-2888. You can also email us at uptodate@kcur.org. KCUR.org. Of course, we're also on KCUR's Facebook page or Twitter at KCUR Up to Date, and we'll talk about good etiquette for those media in a little bit here. Speaking of those media, actually, Henry, the modern technology seems to have brought about a whole new category of etiquette issues and good manners. And you've already mentioned one of your pet peeves of people talking, taking a cell phone call while talking. Where do we start even? Cell phone etiquette. What are the key issues that you've ascertained?
Well, yeah, I don't think you can say that all these forms of new media have made us have worse manners. I think they simply are all these new canvases upon which we can paint our bad manners.
We would be bad-mannered anyway. It's just that we can now see it so much more clearly.
Yeah, and we've got it. It's like finding a new room in your house. I can go onto Facebook and be a bit of a jerk. For me, the biggies are like THX. The people who respond to a lovely email that you've written them with THX.
Thanks.
Yeah. That burns.
Especially you say in your book when it's a really long, well-crafted, carefully thought-out email.
Yeah, exactly. That's just you're not even trying with THX. You're only three letters away. Would it have killed you to crank out that ANK?
On the other hand, you say it's equally rude to reply to a group email that was sent out for information that clearly did not need a response to go ahead and reply all to everybody.
Yes, and as one of my interviewees said, that's like a pixelated version of a styrofoam peanut. no one needs your inessential, great, thanks, sent to the whole group.
Well, and then, of course, there's Facebook.
And then there's Facebook, indeed. Facebook's a tricky one to talk about manners because it's it's almost a form of advertising for some people. Mm. You know, either people are plugging their accomplishments, if they're creative people, or they're plugging their children. But it's a real minefield. The children one is really interesting. You know, this idea, well, is it okay to put your ultrasound picture as your profile picture? Mm. That's really loaded. I think even pictures of your kids can be loaded if you're not highly, highly alert to whether or not there are people who are going to see those pictures who are having trouble conceiving. So I think that, we need to be really conscious of who's reading our status updates on Facebook.
That's interesting. I mean, I guess the issue there that comes to mind for me is that your responsibility or don't they have to show the responsibility of choosing not to read Facebook so closely? I mean, where does the line between one person's responsibility and another fall?
You're saying specifically in the example
Someone who might conceivably be offended by something you would post on Facebook.
In terms of a couple who are having trouble conceiving, or you're saying in any instance?
Well, sure. That's one example. I think you have many friends who want to see your sonogram picture, let's say.
Yeah. I think in that instance, I think the person who's posting the sonogram or the pictures of kids, I think it's their responsibility just to quickly look at their friends list and go and know whether or not there are folks who are having trouble conceiving. I think with the kind of general braggy people, I have a lot of creative friends. So I have a bunch of people who operate Facebook as what I call a roach motel, mm-hmm. meaning they're only going to post stuff. They're never going to comment on anyone else's stuff. For that kind, once it gets to those folks, then I feel like it's the recipient's responsibility to just turn that person's news feed off.
Yeah. 816-235-2888 is our number. I don't think I've ever seen our phone lines fill up as quickly as they did today on this subject. So, Chris in Kansas City, Missouri, you go first. What's your question for Henry Alford?
Well, just a quick comment. We run a contracting business, and every man on my crew knows that there's the utmost gentleman when dealing with clients. But what we have seen over the last 2-3 years is things have gotten hard for people as they're de-evolving. They cut people off in traffic. They throw trash out windows. They don't use basic manners, and mostly among the young. And we really squarely see this as a parental problem where people are not teaching manners in the home. That's the first one. The second thing is I believe with the advent of all the internet and all the instant communication that people have dropped their boundaries with regards to feeling familiar in areas where they really aren't, and so they're expressing behaviors as if they were sitting on their couch at home as opposed to being out in public, and there seems to be absolutely no moral or ethical standard with regards to behavior in this country anymore. I mean, it's just, and if you look at our politicians, look at their negative ads, it simply reinforces being rude. So I guess I wanted to make those comments and see what your response to them were.
Yeah, those are great comments, Chris. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Henry?
Yeah, I think both of those points are terrific, Chris. That the lack of parental guidance may, yes, indeed be fueling a lot of those bad manners that you're talking about. And I think the internet is another culprit. The third big nemesis that people could point at is reality television, of course, because it, as with the internet, leads you to think that, you know, that it, that when people are expressing their innermost feelings to strangers, that suggests that they don't actually care that much about those innermost feelings. So this sort of new brand of familiarity, I agree. There is a dropping of boundaries and there's an over familiarity with one another. And as you point out, the internet, the other aspect of it that's been so deleterious to us is this idea that now that we can do all our banking and, you know, run our whole lives online, we have much shorter attention spans, so that now when we have to deal with an actual human, it suddenly feels very hand crank. It feels like you're suddenly in the 18th century or something. So I think we all need to take a step back and realize, you know, that girl behind the counter, her name isn't Google. You know, she simply cannot cull information and get stuff that you need if she's providing service for you. She simply cannot do it at the rate a computer does.
It's an interesting point. The last caller, Chris, talked a little bit about parental education of young people. Kate in Raymore, you learned about manners from a parental figure too, right?
Yes. Actually, I'm a grandmother of 8 now, but when I was raising my children, I grew up in the Midwest, but my mother-in-law was from the Deep South, and she insisted that manners be practiced in her home as well as in mine, almost extensively, but I think it was a great thing for me. It was a great thing for me to see as a parent. It was a great thing for my children, and it has served my grandchildren very well because that's been carried on through the generation.
That's interesting. How often do we see – thank you, Kate, for the call. How often do we see grandparents as the inculcators of good manners, Henry?
Well, that's happening much and much less often, of course, as, you know, families break up and kids are living with step-parents or what have you. But what a wonderful line of tradition and, yeah, way to have instruction passed down through the generations. It's terrific if that's how it can happen. Given the nuclear modern family, it's not always possible.
We have an email from Rex who says, good manners are a reflection of one's character and are a critical expression of courtesy. There is no excuse for a lack of either courtesy or manners. Good manners are a reflection of one's character. Do you think that's true, Henry?
I do think that's true. You know, historically, there have always been two kinds of manners. One is morals writ in miniature, which is sort of what he's talking about there. That would be like, you know, don't talk until the person you're talking with stops talking. And then the second kind of manners are codes of behavior meant to exclude others. And that would be like, you know, speaking a foreign language that not everyone present speaks. I think that in contemporary society, I think we're dealing much more mercifully with the former kind of manners, with the morals writ in miniature. I think that we live in an increasingly egalitarian society, and I think that, you know, political correctness, despite sometimes being comically excessive, I think that it has really raised the bar. I really like that notion that that manners are morals writ small, or a portrait of our character.
Linda in Independence has a thought about how to avoid getting a THX response to an email. Linda, good morning.
Well, if you're looking, thank you for taking my call. If you're looking for a carefully thought out, polite, mannerly, dignified response, then you're not going to get it on email. You're not going to get it on Facebook. You should write a letter and put it in the mail so that we're dealing with real stuff. It's like these silly people who write something on email about a death in the family. That is so not manners.
Okay, Linda. Thank you for your call. And I think you do talk in your book about the appropriateness of matching a response to the way you received the message in the first place.
Yeah, I think that with all these forms of new media that there is a sort of an implicit hierarchy, and I think that you need to match the incoming vehicle or go higher, but not go lower, which is to say if someone emails you, then I think you've got to either email them or call them or, you know, go up the chain. But I think you can't answer an email by then, say, messaging them on Facebook. You can't go down the chain of intimacy.
You can step it up, but not down.
Well, yeah.
We're talking with Henry Alford, the author of the book, Would It Kill You to Stop Doing That? We'll talk more with him about manners, including about your manner pet peeves, which I know is what a lot of our emails and calls are about. We'll take calls from Beverly and Teresa and some emails and tweets as well. So stay with us. You're listening to Up to Date. Don't forget, you can still call in at 816-235-2888 or email us at uptodate@kcur.org. I'm Brian Ellison, in for Steve Kraske. Stay with us. And welcome back to Up to Date. I'm Brian Ellison, in for Steve Kraske. If you're not stuck at home watching Downton Abbey, you'll find a load of great independent foreign and documentary films showing on area screens. You can find our critics' take on them and all of our previous broadcasts, including Fridays, where we heard about those, at kcur.org. We're talking today with Henry Alford, the author of Would It Kill You to Stop Doing That?, a book about manners in the modern age. We hope you'll join our conversation with your own thoughts or even your pet peeves about manners, 816-235-2888. You can tweet at KCUR Up to Date or make a comment on the KCUR Facebook page, too. Henry Alford, a lot of folks have written in with their pet peeves, including Deanne, who tweets us, people talking loudly on the cell phone while in a public toilet, which seems not only rude but unsanitary.
It's true. Absolutely. I would say that's probably the number one pet peeve that people have is the inappropriate use of the cell phone. And I guess what it's about is that it's that it causes you to listen in on a conversation only half of which you can hear. We all love to eavesdrop. If that person were having a conversation with another person in the toilet, that would be kind of interesting to us.
Right.
But the fact that we're only getting half the conversation is so irritating.
Right. In fact, Lois in Kansas City, Kansas, I know this is why Lois, is your radio on? There we go. Lois, I know this is why you've called in. What's the problem with people talking on their cell phones? Still there, Lois? Well, I guess she decided we were already covering her point, so we wouldn't share it. You know, there's other peeves on the line here. Beverly in Gladstone, good morning.
Good morning.
What really bugs you about bad manners?
My pet peeve, and this has been for years and years, is when you are in a store and you are waiting there to pay for something and the person waiting on you is carrying on a personal conversation with a coworker. And then when you are completed and you say thank you to that person, they say, uh-huh. Uh-huh does not mean you're welcome.
Ah, okay. So two different issues with salespeople in stores.
Yeah.
Let's deal with the ignoring issue first, Henry. What do you think of that one?
Well, it's so interesting that she brings that up because, in fact, that was the genesis of this book, was that I was at my local grocery store and the gal behind the counter dropped my apple on the floor and then picked it up off the floor and put it in my bag and saying nothing. So it started a reverse apology campaign that I did for 6 weeks where I would start apologizing for people when they owed me an apology. So I said to this gal, I'm sorry. And she said nothing. And so I said, no, I'm sorry. I didn't mean for you to drop my apple like that. At which point she said nothing. She said nothing again. So I then did that to about 20 people over the course of the next 6 weeks. It's a really we feel put in our place when people don't help us out. It's a tricky one to talk about because you never want bad manners to sound classist, so that I think if we single out people in the service economy, it sometimes there's a little bit of it almost feels like class rage to me. But I know exactly what you're talking about there with that kind of inattention and neglect.
Well, and it seems to be more common with young people. I would say people under the age of 30. And I think someone alluded earlier to learning your manners at home. I just think you're not learning your manners at home, and it's not being reinforced at home.
It's true, because that could come. Well, in that case, there's someone who's working a cash register, they could also be receiving instruction from their manager. As you know, someone needs to tell these folks the customer always comes first.
True.
Beverly, absolutely. I appreciate your call. Thanks so much for calling.
Thank you so much. I'm enjoying your show.
Thank you. And speaking of classism as it intersects with good manners, Teresa in Kansas City, Missouri has a comment. Good morning, Teresa.
Good morning.
Thanks for waiting.
My call. No, that's no problem. Thank you. What I'm calling my comment is regarding perhaps people's perception of socioeconomic status of others. And the person that is perceived to be on the lower socioeconomic end may often be treated much more rudely than someone that is perceived to be on the upper end. And we see this in business every day or in a retail situation or what have you. Just wanted your thoughts on that.
Oh, yeah. Well, I see that all the time in New York City, that folks who are not dressed as well or who somehow give off an air of less prosperousness, sometimes, we'll get a high-handed reaction, particularly from shopkeepers. And I think it's terrible. Obviously, good manners have no relationship whatsoever to socioeconomic factors. They're available to everyone, and they should be practiced by everyone. So when people take that kind of shallow shortcut and give people the short shrift because of their appearance, I think that's it's really abominable.
Teresa, thank you so much for the call.
Thanks, Teresa.
We're continuing to speak about pet peeves that people have. And boy, one that we've heard a lot about in the last couple of days as we've been talking about this topic has to do with invitations. So Leslie writes, there are many niceties that are lacking and which I miss in 2012. Not least among them is the seeming inability to make a decision to accept or decline an invitation. Writing down one's reply on an enclosed RSVP card, inserting said card into an envelope, also provided with a stamp affixed in the upper right corner, or just pushing send on a keyboard and dropping it into the postbox all before the date of the event appears beyond the capability of almost every social group and individual.
Absolutely.
That your observation too, Henry?
Oh, that one's huge. Yeah. And what people don't realize is that a lot of times with a big party, particularly one thrown by an institution, that sometimes people are being invited in waves, so that if you don't send in your regrets, you may actually be keeping someone else from being invited. Because a lot of times, yeah, they're sending out the first 100 invitations and seeing what kind of a response they get. And once, you know, the first 40 come back no, only then can they send the second 200 batch of invites. So it's really important on that front. But then just on a general level, yeah, you should, you know, everyone likes to ride out those kind of decisions until the last minute. And it's really not fair to the people who are organizing the event.
Mm-hmm. On the other end of the event, is the issue of thank you notes. A friend of mine wrote that some of her adult children's companions come to stay with them on occasion. Some of them snail mail handwritten notes afterward, and others don't. They're all lovely people, she says, but she finds that she likes the one who send thank you notes better.
Yeah. Well, certainly a handwritten note on a card bears so much more heft. I think that if I bought you lunch and you're a pretty good friend of mine and you sent me a card, however, that might be overkill. So I think, yeah, there are ways to you have to gauge what the event calls for. But yes, I think if someone has you over for dinner or if you're a house guest at someone's house, I think sending a card is a really lovely thing. The thing with the email is not only does it have a much lighter valence than a handwritten card, but it also it just creates the slight awkwardness if it's a thank you note because the recipient wonders, oh, well, do I need to respond to this? Do I need to write back? And that's the last thing you want to do. If you're if you're thanking someone, you want it to be a clean bill of goods. You know, here's my gift, and I'm gone.
And you don't need to thank someone for a thank you note. Is that correct?
You don't need to thank someone for a thank you note because where do you stop?
Exactly, it's a terrible vicious cycle. We also received this email. I've sent out two wedding gifts, one a year ago and one 2 years ago, and never received a thank you note. Are they out of style? I don't want to send wedding gifts out ever again. So we've got a sour listener as a result of bad manners.
He's been hurt. He's been hurt bad.
Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, no, just that I think you can't you can't expect to always get the thank you note. And, yeah, with something like a wedding present where it's a year later, yes, they should have written one, but they didn't. So I'm saying take the high road, forgive and forget.
You're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. We're talking with Henry Alford, who has written a book called Would It Kill You to Stop Doing That? You can find out more information about him with a link from our website at kcur.org. Lois in Kansas City, Kansas, we lost her a little earlier, but you had a good comment about cell phones.
Yes, indeed. Good afternoon.
Hello.
It's ironic that you would have this program today. Cell phones, misconduct. I'm responsible for our teenage grandson, and only yesterday during our route to the store, young lady was on there for about 45 minutes, use profanity, talking loud, what have you. And he asked me, he said, well, I wonder why she stayed on the phone. I wonder this, I wonder that. I said, that's one of the things that I try to deter you from today. She's in someone else's space. She's ill-mannered. And she doesn't care about anyone else. And that's why we try to work with you today so you can be prepared for tomorrow. Everything is not okay. We allow things to go too far in society before we try to put a handle on it. There should be something to remind people that everybody has a right. And she was in our space as well as in other shoppers' spaces. She didn't care.
So she was talking her way through the store.
And loud.
Well, Lois, I appreciate your willingness to share this unfortunate incident with us. Thank you.
I thank you for receiving me. Have a good day.
You know, she raises a question again. A lot of our folks are raising it about young people, interestingly. Nan wrote an email, says, are manners no longer being taught in the public schools, or is that now considered not a role for teachers to take? She asks because she's a 68-year-old woman who's noticed that many children, teen, and adults constantly walk across her path in front of her rather than behind, as she was taught as a child. She wonders if she's invisible to them. Let me ask this sensitively. Is this a generational thing? Are older generations actually being too sensitive? Are things that young people are doing not actually bad manners, just a changing world?
Well, if you look at it historically, 'twas ever thus, that this gripe has been going on for centuries. The older generation saying it's these young people today, they don't know what they're doing. It's a tricky one. I do think that contemporary society has some particularly unattractive glosses on this young people's behavior. I do think this the popularity of reality television has put a really weird fix on certain young people's minds. I think that if you're 10 years old and you watch a lot of reality TV, you might think it's an attractive quality to have a signature stock line that you repeat every 15 or 20 seconds. Because that's something that you see all the time on Jersey Shore and shows
right.
like that. And I do think, as we talked about before, this confessional aspect to reality TV, this, you know, I'm going to gush about something very, very private to a stranger. Those are two weird, new, particularly insidious things. But that larger point you're making about older generation v. younger generation, that's been going on forever.
Exactly. Let's talk to Richard in Overland Park. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning. Thank you so much for the show. It's a wonderful topic. And I have a 6'4 and 2-year-old, and our 6-year-old boy who goes to, you know, obviously lots of birthday parties and the like. My wife is absolutely insistent that he sits down and writes a thank you note to the person who gave the party. Moreover, when we have the party, she writes down a list of who gave what, and our 6-year-old sits down at the table and writes a thank you note to each individual person who gave him a gift.
Wow.
And we hit on a point earlier that I just think is so right on, and it's there are no rude children, you know? They're taught behavior, and I promise you that this child will absolutely throughout his life carry the idea of what is, in fact, being well-mannered and what's not, and he's already started, he's a first grader now, seeing the difference between polite behavior and impolite behavior, and it's something that we have taught him. Just like you teach children, people are taught to hate. You know, people are taught a loving kindness. People are taught respect. People are taught manners. And I find it interesting that is not more ingrained in the way to raise a child properly. I have one more comment, and I'll leave it off the air. And we had said that it happens every generation. This young generation is, you know, really has an erosion of values, and on, you know, from the 50s to the 60s to the 70s to the 80s, and you know, every generation has an erosion according to the older generation. But it's true. I mean, if you look at the 50s, for example, just one example is airline passengers in the 50s, you know, wore a suit to get onto an airplane. It was just a more gentle and pleasant and polite, seemingly, I wasn't around, but seemingly sure, more polite society. And I long for that. I really think it's a wonderful thing to live in a polite society. It makes life so much nicer, in my opinion. So, moreover, and one last thing, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, let me just ask our guest, Richard. So is he right, Henry? Are we headed in a? Does it get a little worse every decade to the point where everything will be just hell in a handbasket here in another 20, 30 years?
It's a great question. And you know, when I interviewed Miss Manners, I asked her the same question, and as she said, "Look, you can argue that either way. You can argue that our manners have improved, or you can argue that they've gotten drastically worse." It's really a hazy area with this topic, because there's no way to actually quantify whether our manners as a whole society have gotten better or worse. But, you know, as we've discussed, you can point to these specific things like new media and show how, yeah, the advent of those have brought out specific bad turns of decorum.
Richard, thanks for your call. Let's take one more call from Maya in Kansas City. Maya?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
Let me tell you my personal piece. I should probably tell you that I was born and raised in Austria, and after the age of 14, one addresses a person by their last name. I come to this country, and it still irritates me when people I've never met before, people on the telephone, I don't know who they are, and address me by my first name.
Oh, dear, I apologize. I apologize, Maya. I just did
rude.
That. I've been terribly rude to you just now. I apologize.
You're forgiven.
Well, thank you.
but don't you think if we would go back, and I think it was in this country years and years ago, I've heard that people did address other people they are not friends with by their last name. I think it would make for a more polite society.
Yeah, great point, Maya. Henry, did you encounter sort of the way that people address one another as an element of manners that are changing?
It is.
Yes, well, it started when I first came here, and that was many, many years ago.
Okay, I was asking our...
I'm not over the shock of being addressed by my first name the minute I meet someone.
Okay, I appreciate that. What do you think, Henry?
Well, the thing about forms of address is that I would never argue for formality for formality's sake. To me, the big issue here with manners is, are you hurting another person's feelings, or are you causing some sort of distress? And I think that in our caller's instance, yes, that if people are not calling her by her surname, that it is causing her momentary distress. So I think absolutely you should use the formal title. I think that in the United States, with many adults who were born here, that a lot of them do take a much more casual approach and prefer to be called by their first names. So I think to the extent that it's possible, you, the speaker, should try to figure out, well, is this one of those people who would prefer that I call her Lois, or is this someone who would much rather be called Mrs. Huntsman?
Mm-hmm. And all of this makes me think about, as I've mentioned already once this hour, the television program Downton Abbey, where everyone addresses each other very formally in early 20th century England, and yet sort of behind the scenes, under the surface, all of the proper and deferential and polite treatment of one another is hiding sort of what's going on beneath the surface sometimes.
Yes.
That manners become something that is superficial.
It's true. Yeah, there's so much subtext on that show. Well, again, that takes us back to the term fictitious benevolence. I think that as long as you pay heed to decorum, as long as you offer the courtesy words, you can be thinking whatever you want to. But it's really and this is particularly when we deal with strangers, and that's kind of an interesting line in the history of manners, is that a lot of the interest in manners, if you look at something like the first two decades of the 19th century, there was a huge efflorescence in the publication of etiquette books. And that's because people were moving to the cities and suddenly had to confront lots of strangers. Whereas if you lived in a small village, you pretty much knew everyone in your village, and you knew what your various kinds of behavior, what kind of reaction they would get. But as soon as you enter a situation where you're dealing with a total stranger, that's where these courtesy words and these little beautiful formal fillips really come into play.
I'm afraid that's where we'll have to leave it. I want to offer my profound apologies with all good intent and politeness to Alex and Jen and Jill, who are still on the line, and our many other writers and tweeters and Facebookers. Thank you all for participating. And thank you, Henry Alford, author of Would It Kill You to Stop Doing That? Thank you so much for spending a little while with us today.
Thank you, Brian.
You can
Mr.
Read,
Allison.
Yes, Mr. Allison, right. Thank you. That's better, Mr. Alford. He joined us from NPR's New York studios. You can find out more about Henry Alford and all our guests and previous podcasts at kcur.org. You can also continue today's conversation on KCUR's Facebook page and follow the program on Twitter at KCUR UpToDate. We had help today from KCUR's Kim Noble and Maria Carter. Our show is produced by Steven Steigman. Sitting in for Steve Kraske, I'm Brian Ellison, and you are up to date.